And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today is November the 1st. 305th day of the year. Only 60 days remain till the year's over with. Excuse me. You know, it's also Day of the Dead. Never know when they're going to be wandering around. Well, on this day in 365, the Alemanni cross the Rhine and invade Gaul. Emperor Valentinian I moves to Paris to command the army and defend the Gallic cities. 996, Emperor Otto III issues a deed to Gottschalk, Bishop of Freising. That's the oldest known document using the name Austria in Old High German. In the year 1009, Berber forces led by Suleiman ibn al-Hakam defeat the Umayyad Caliph Muhammad II of Cordoba in the Battle of Alcolea. 1141, Empress Matilda's reign is later the English, ends with Stephen of Blois regaining the title of King of England. 1179, Philip II's crowned King of France. 1214, the port city of Sinope surrenders to the Seljuk Turks. 1348, the anti-royalist Union of Valencia attacks the Jews of Murviedro on the pretext that they're serfs of the King of Valencia and thus royalist. 1503, Pope Julius II is elected. 1512, the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, painted by Michelangelo, is exhibited to the public for the first time. And in spite of what the so-called rock star said, it's not the 16th chapel. 1520, the Strait of Magellan, the passage immediately south of mainland South America connecting the Pacific and the Atlantic, is first discovered and navigated by European explorer Ferdinand Magellan during the first recorded circumnavigation voyage. It took place on this date. 1555, the French Huguenots established the France Antarctique colony in present-day Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. 1570, the All Saints flood devastates the Dutch coast. Even the saints got their feet wet. 1604, William Shakespeare's tragedy Othello is performed for the first time at Whitehall Palace in London. 1611, Shakespeare's play The Tempest is performed for the first time at Whitehall Palace in London. 1612, during the Time of Troubles, as it's called, Polish troops are expelled from Moscow's Kotel Grad by Russian troops under the command of Dmitry Pozharsky. 1683, the British Crown Colony of New York is subdivided into 12 counties. 1688, William III of Orange sets out a second time from Heiligoloskoe Louis in the Netherlands to seize the crowns of England, Scotland, and Ireland from King James II of England during the Glorious Revolution. 1755, in Portugal, Lisbon is totally devastated by a massive earthquake and tsunami. Between 60,000 and 90,000 people are killed. 1765, the British Parliament enacts the Stamp Act on the 13 colonies in order to help pay for British military operations in North America. The colonists were not exactly a fan of the Stamp Act. In fact, it imposed a direct tax on the British colonies in America and required that many printed materials in the colonies be produced on stamped paper produced only in London, which carried an embossed revenue stamp. This included legal documents, magazines, playing cards, newspapers, and a lot of other types of paper used throughout the colonies. Had to be paid in British currency, not in colonial paper money. So that was a major problem. 1790, Edmund Burke publishes Reflections on the Revolution in France, in which he predicts that the French Revolution will end in a disaster. And there are many who say that it did. 1800, John Adams becomes the first president of the U.S. to live in the Executive Mansion. The Executive Mansion was later renamed the White House after they got a good deal on white paint. 1805, Napoleon Bonaparte invades Austria during the War of the Third Coalition. 1814, Congress of Vienna opens to redraw the European political map after the defeat of France in the Napoleonic Wars. 1848, in Boston, Massachusetts, the first medical school for women, the Boston Female Medical School, opens. It was later merged with the Boston University School of Medicine. 1861, American Civil War. President Lincoln appoints George B. McClellan commander of the Union Army, replacing General Winfield Scott, who was the commander at the beginning of the war. 1870, in the U.S., the Weather Bureau makes its first official meteorological forecast. It was later renamed the National Weather Service. 1893, the Battle of Bembazi took place. It was the most decisive battle won by the British in the first Montebelli War of 1893. 1894, Nicholas II becomes the new and last Tsar of Russia after his father Alexander III dies. Also in 1894, Buffalo Bill, 15 of his Indians, and Annie Oakley are filmed by Thomas Edison in his Black Maria studio in West Orange, New Jersey. In 1896, a picture showing the bare breast of a woman appears in National Geographic magazine for the first time, and an entire generation of boys rush to get copies. 1897, the first Library of Congress building opens its doors to the public. It had previously been housed in the Congressional Reading Room in the U.S. Capitol, but it outgrew its facilities. 1911, the world's first combat aerial bombing mission takes place in Libya in the Italo-Turkish War. Second Lieutenant Giulio Gavati of Italy drops several small bombs on the enemy. 1914, World War I, first British Royal Navy defeat of the war with Germany. The Battle of Coronel is fought off the western coast of Chile in the Pacific. The Brits lost the HMS Good Hope and the HMS Monmouth. 1914, World War I, the Australian Imperial Force departed by ship and a single convoy from Albany, Western Australia, bound for Egypt. 1916, in Russia, Pavel Miliukov delivers in the State Duma the famous stupidity or treason speech. It precipitates the downfall of the government of Boris Stumer. 1918, World War I, with a brave action carried out in the waters of the Austro-Hungarian port of Pula, two officers of the Italian Regia Marina sink with a manned torpedo, the enemy battleship SMS Viribus Unitas. 1918, Malvern Street wreck. The worst rapid transit accident in U.S. history occurs under the intersection of Malvern Street and Flatbush Avenue in Brooklyn, with at least 102 people dying. 1918, Western Ukraine separates from Austria-Hungary. 1922, abolition of the Ottoman Sultanate. The last sultan of the Ottoman Empire, Mehmed VI, abdicates. So ended what amounted to the Ottoman Empire. 1928, the law of the adoption and implementation of the Turkish alphabet replaces the Arabic alphabet with the Latin alphabet. 1937, Stalinists execute Pastor Paul Hamburg and seven members of Azerbaijan's Lutheran community. 1938, Seabiscuit defeats War Admiral in an upset victory during a match race deemed the match of the century in horse racing. 1941, American photographer Ansel Adams takes a picture of a moonrise over the town of Hernandez, New Mexico, that would become one of the most famous images in the history of photography. 1942, World War II. Mantanacal Offensive begins during the Guadalcanal Campaign and ends 3 days later with an American victory. 1943, World War II, the 3rd Marine Division landing on Bougainville in the Solomon Islands secures a beachhead, leading that night to a naval clash at the Battle of Empress Augustus Bay. 1944, World War II, units of the British Army land at Walcheren. 1945, the official North Korean newspaper, Rodong Sinmun, is first published under the name of Changro. 1948, Athenagoras I, Ecumenical Patriarch of Constantinople, is enthroned. The heights religious leaders took themselves to, it's just amazing. 1949, all 55 people on board Eastern Airlines Flight 537 are killed when that Douglas DC-4 operating the flight collides in midair with a Bolivian Air Force Lockheed P-38 Lightning aircraft over Alexandria, Virginia. 1950, Puerto Rican nationalists Griselo Torresola and Oscar Collazo attempt to assassinate President Truman at Blair House. It became what amounted to a comedy of errors. 1950, Pope Pius XII claims papal infallibility when he formally defines the dogma of the Assumption of Mary. Papal infallibility, for those that are not familiar with it, is a dogma of the Roman Catholic Church. It states, in virtue of the promise of Jesus to Peter, the Pope, when he speaks ex cathedra, is preserved from the possibility of error on the doctrine initially given to the Apostolic Church and handed down in scripture and tradition. It says, basically, the Pope cannot be wrong because he's speaking for God. It's one of the cornerstones of Catholic dogma. And it basically supports papal supremacy. And his authority is the ruling agent who decides what are accepted as formal beliefs in the Roman Catholic Church. Anybody who tells me he can't be wrong is wrong. 1951, Operation Buster Jangle. 6,500 American soldiers are exposed to desert rock atomic explosions for training purposes in Nevada. The participation in that operation was not voluntary. 1952, they wanted to see what would happen. 1952, nuclear weapons testing. The U.S. successfully detonates Ivy Mike, the first thermonuclear device at the Niuetoc Atoll. The explosion had a yield of 10 megatons, TNT equivalent. 1954, the Front de Liberation Nationale fires the first shots at the Algerian War of Independence. 1955, the establishment of a military assistance advisor group in South Vietnam marks the beginning of American involvement in that conflict. They were just going to be advisors, and eventually it wound up becoming an American war. 1955, the bombing of United Airlines Flight 629 occurs near Langmont, Colorado, kills all 39 passengers and 5 crew members aboard a Douglas DC-6B airliner. 1956, the Indian states Kerala, Andhra Pradesh, and Mysore are formally created under the State Reorganization Act. Kanyakumari district is joined to Tamil Nadu from Kerala. 1956, Hungarian Revolution. Emery Nagy announces Hungary's neutrality and withdrawal from the Warsaw Pact. Soviet troops begin to re-enter Hungary, contrary to assurances by the Soviet government. Janos Kadar and Ferenc Munich secretly defect to the Soviets. 1956, the Spring Hill mining disaster in Spring Hill, Nova Scotia kills 39 miners, 88 are rescued. 1956, the Mackinac Bridge, the world's longest suspension bridge between anchorages at the time, opens to traffic connecting Michigan's upper and lower peninsula. 1963, the Arecibo Observatory in Arecibo, Puerto Rico, which has the largest radio telescope ever constructed, officially opens. 1963, the 1963 South Vietnamese coup begins. 1968, the Motion Picture Association of America's film rating system is officially introduced, originating with the ratings of G, M, R, and X. 1970, Club Cinq Sept fire in Saint Laurent du Pont, France, kills 146 young people. 1973, Watergate scandal. Leon Jaworski is appointed as the new Watergate special prosecutor. 1973, the Indian state of Mysore is renamed as Karnataka to represent all regions within the Karunadu. 1979, in Bolivia, Colonel Alberto Natush executes a bloody coup d'etat against the constitutional government of Walter Guevara. 1979, Griselda Alvarez becomes the first female governor of the state of Mexico. 1981, Antigua and Barbuda gain independence from the UK. 1982, Honda becomes the first Asian automobile company to produce cars in the U.S. with the opening of its factory in Marysville, Ohio. The Honda Accord is the first car to be produced there. 1984, after the assassination of Indira Gandhi, who was Prime Minister of India on October 31, 1984, by two of her Sikh bodyguards, anti-Sikh riots erupt. 1987, British Rail Class 43 hits the record speed of 238 kilometers per hour for rail vehicles with onboard fuel to generate electricity for traction motors. 1993, the Maastricht Treaty takes effect, formally establishing the European Union. 2000, Chhattisgarh officially becomes the 26th state of India, formed from 16 districts of eastern Madhya Pradesh. 2000, Republic of Serbia and Montenegro joined the United Nations. And in 2012, a fuel tank truck crashes and explodes in the Saudi Arabian capital of Riyadh, kills 26 and injures 135. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays observances, All Saints Day, a holy day of obligation in some areas. And its related observances to take place on this date. It's a national holiday in many historically Catholic countries. And the Day of Innocence, the first day of the Day of the Dead celebration in Mexico and Haiti. Anniversary of the Revolution in Algeria. Chavan Kut among the Mizo people of Northeast India, Bangladesh, and Burma. Chhattisgarh Rajasava in India. Christian Feast Day, Astronomoin, Benignus of Dijon, Casarius of Africa, Santa Muerte in the folk Catholicism in Mexico and southwestern U.S. Coronation of the fifth Druk Gyalpo in Bhutan. Always day in which Arbor Day can fall. November 7th is the latest, celebrated on the first Friday in November in Samoa. Earliest day in which Children's Day can fall, November 7th is the latest, celebrated on the first Saturday in November in South Africa. Earliest day in which Health Day can fall, November 7th is the latest, celebrated on the first Saturday in November in Turkmenistan. Earliest day on which National Bison Day can fall, November 7th is the latest, celebrated on the first Saturday in November in the U.S. Independence Day celebrates independence of Antigua and Barbuda from the UK in 1981. Karnataka Rajyotsava in India. Kerala Day in Kerala, India. Liberty Day in the U.S. Virgin Islands. International Lennox-Gastaut Syndrome Awareness Day. National Brush Day in the U.S. National Awakening Day in Bulgaria. Self-Defense Force Commemoration Day in Japan. Kalan Gaeaf celebration started at sunset on October 31st in Wales. That's the first day of winter observances. Samhain in the Northern Hemisphere and Beltane in the Southern Hemisphere. Celebration started at sunset on October 31st. That's the Neo-Pagan Wheel of the Year. And it's World Vegan Day. Let's see if there's anything else. As I mentioned, it is Day of the Dead. It's a holiday celebrated from October 31st through November the 2nd. It was initially a Mexican holiday where families welcome back the souls of their deceased relatives for a brief reunion. It includes food and drink and celebration. It's a blend of Mesoamerican ritual, European religion, and Spanish culture. According to tradition, the gates of heaven are opened at midnight, October 31st, and spirits of the children can rejoin their families for 24 hours. The spirits of adults can do the same on November 2nd. It's celebrated in contemporary Mexico and among those of Mexican heritage in the U.S. and around the world. It actually goes back about 3,000 years to the rituals honoring the dead in pre-Columbian Mesoamerica. The Aztecs and other Nahua people living in what's now central Mexico held a cyclical view of the universe and saw death as an integral, ever-present part of life. Well, we've come to the end of our little history segment. We'll talk about our main topic next. Okay, it's, as I said earlier, November 1st, Day of the Dead. My computer went on strike. You know, theoretically, the Day of the Dead is not about ghosts. It's about remembering those who died. It's considered part of the holiday season, though this year there's not a whole lot to celebrate, I don't think. It's a two-day observance celebrating November 1st and 2nd. And the you know, the major part of the Day of the Dead is the making of what's called the altar. Items are handmade or purchased and put on the altar along with personal possessions of the deceased. Now, there's an interesting story about that. One of my books is entitled Haunted Hotels. And on the cover is the picture that was taken by a manager at the Camino Real Hotel a number of years ago. And it's of a little girl walking down the hall with a doll under her arm. Now, the interesting thing about that little girl is you can see through her. She's a ghost. This was on the sixth floor of the hotel, except that's where she normally haunts. When the picture was taken, she was on the fourth floor, I think. On the Day of the Dead, since she had died in the hotel, some of the staff who knew about the death, which happened, you know, some time ago, put together an altar. And on that altar, they put a Barbie doll. Well, when they went to take it down on the third, the doll was gone. And of course, they accused each other of having taken the doll. In that photograph on the cover of the book, the little girl has the doll under her arm. She came and got the Barbie doll. Well, one of the stories that I've told over the years is about the Hotel Paso del Norte, which became known as the Camino Real. It was the dream of Zach White, a native of Amherst County, Virginia, who became a very successful El Paso businessman. Ironically, the design of this hotel was the product of two great disasters. The burning of El Paso's Grand Central Hotel in 1892. And it had been located on the where the Mills building is now. And the other great disaster was the 1906 San Francisco earthquake. Now, Zach White had been one of those who'd helped try to put the fire out at the Grand Central Hotel. And this incident, he said, was the beginning of his idea to build a fireproof hotel in El Paso. And after the 1906 San Francisco earthquake, Zach White and J.E. Lewis, an engineer, copied the plans and the design features of those buildings that survived the earthquake. And those earthquake-proof features, coupled with a fireproof design, were incorporated into the Hotel Paso del Norte, which opened for guests in December 1912. He also aided in the building of the first Santa Fe Street International Bridge, which was replaced by the Paso del Norte Bridge in 1967. He also helped build the first brick plant in El Paso, as well as the first streetcar line. And he was vice president of the Gas, Electric, Light, and Power Company. And he was one of El Paso's strongest advocates for the use of electricity and gas. But his monument, if you will, was what he referred to as his dream hotel. Now, where the Paso del Norte sits used to be the Kohlberg Cigar Store and Factory, the Guaranteed Shoe Store, and the Happy Hour Theater, which is El Paso's best-known vaudeville house. They spent $1.5 million building that hotel. It took 2 years, and it was built by Trost & Trost Architects. Only the finest material used in the construction of this hotel. It was 10 stories, built of steel and concrete on an earthquake-proof foundation. So if there's ever an earthquake in El Paso, beat feet over to the Camino Real. Now, he had Italian artisans brought to El Paso to do the work he wanted inside the hotel. Had Tiffany's, specifically designed and construct a Tiffany stained glass dome that covers the lobby of this old hotel. It's actually made up of 17 pieces and is suspended by wires because of its tremendous weight. If it wasn't suspended by wires, it would collapse in the center. Now, the dome bar chandeliers are unique in their design. During one of the renovations of the hotel, these European chandeliers were installed to light the lobby. They were among the first electrical lights in the area. Now, originally, they used coal to fire the boilers to produce heat. And the coal would be collected in rail cars and dumped on the yard adjacent to the property. Now, I'm sure Mr. White didn't plan on the Camino Real or the Hotel Paso del Norte becoming a haven for the restless spirits of those who died but not yet gone on. And I've attended a lot of events at this historic old hotel, and naturally in our discussion with other attendees, the conversations often turn to the stories associated with the hotel. There's been a young woman wearing a long white dress who's been seen in the basement of the hotel often. Staff talks about her. According to the story associated with this young lady, she'd gotten pregnant. It was agreed she and the young man would get married. And as both families were somewhat prominent in the community, arrangements were made for this wedding, which was to take place in the ballroom on the 10th floor of the hotel, to be one of the first events to be held at the newly completed Hotel Paso del Norte. It was going to be the wedding of the season. When the big day arrived, everybody who was anybody was at the hotel, except the groom and one bridesmaid. He never showed up. Mortified and depressed, being left at the altar, the young would-be bride jumped out of one of the 10th floor windows, which were located behind where the minister was going to stand, and they were open because they needed a cross breeze. It said that her spirit comes back still looking for her young man. I met her on an elevator ride, and I thought she was real. In fact, the day I met her, I knew there was a wedding going on, and there was a bride on the elevator when I got on because I used to do my Saturday ghost tours at the Camino. And we our eyes met, as you do with people on the elevator, and I said, "It's not too late to run." And she smiled and didn't say anything. I got off on the floor I was going to, and she continued. Found out later, the bride, the only bride at the hotel, is actually a blonde, and this was a very pretty brunette. On the mezzanine, it's been said that sometimes, and this is usually late at night, in the early hours of the new day, members of the cleaning crew will find doors where they're not supposed to be doors, and stairs where they're not supposed to be stairs. And at one particular door, you can hear the sounds of a party going on. As of yet, I'm told, nobody's opened a door to see what's behind it. Those who say they've seen that mysterious door have gone to get somebody else to witness this bizarre situation. When they come back, the door and the sounds coming from behind it have vanished. They found only a blank wall where the door had been only a short time before. Maybe one day somebody will have the courage to open the door and see who's at the party. Now, the original Hotel Paso del Norte has been added on to several times over the years. The current entrance and registration desk is, in fact, in a new addition. 1986, the Dome Bar was directly beneath the Tiffany Dome, for which the hotel is so well known. As a result of this conversion of the lobby area into a bar, the original entrance to the hotel now opens directly into the Dome Bar and is rarely used. Another of the expansions to the original hotel resulted in the demolishing of the L&A Theater, a historic old theater that had been built in 1918 by J.M. Lewis and Victor Andreas. They spent $94,500 building that theater, which opened a great fanfare November 10th, 1918, had a seating capacity of 940, which was considered unbelievable. In fact, many came to the L&A just to see the unbelievably ornate facade. The two owners had spared no expense in trying to outdo all the other similar enterprises in the city. There was a recessed arch over the marquee that enclosed a glazed tile mural featuring three muses from Greek mythology and two paired couples dressed in Roman clothing. Tree foliage formed the foreground under the arch, and a Renaissance landscape in the background completed what was surely an eye-catching mural. The glazed tiles were large, about 24 inches square. The tower arch was about 25 feet in length. About 4 feet below the cornice of the building were busts of J.M. Lewis and Victor Andreas. Unfortunately, in the 1983 expansion of the Hotel Paso del Norte, the L&A was demolished to make room for the new area to be included in the hotel. There's another entrance into what used to be the original Hotel Paso del Norte. It's now called Uptowns. You get there from San Antonio Street, but that door is almost always locked. As a result, the historic original bar, which is sometimes open for parties and political events, is seldom used. At one event, my wife and I attended at the hotel. We were early in the doors to the ballroom on the mezzanine where the event was to be held were still locked, so the staff could finish setting up the room. So we went down to the Dome Bar to wait. While we were sitting there, I idly asked one of the waitresses about a story I'd heard of people walking on the wall in the lobby. She looked around to make sure nobody could hear, and there weren't too many people there. We were early enough, so she balanced her tray on one hip and related the story. She said, "I heard there was a mural on the wall showing a group of people standing around a piano." She said, "I'd never really noticed that mural before, but she said she had two friends who told her they've seen the mural the young lady was referring to." She said, "I heard that one night one of the night managers was checking the bar and comparing sales with stock levels, things like that.
And he began to have the strange feeling something was wrong. And he glanced up to see a woman walk out of the mural and stop in the middle of the floor. He described her as young and slim and very attractive. She dressed in clothing from years ago and wearing one of those big hats that had flowers on it. She looked around like she was confused or never seemed to notice the night manager standing just a few feet away. Well, he went around the barn, approached her, and as he did, she backed up right into the mural and merged with the wall. She said he went over and ran his hands over the wall, but there was no niche or recess where she could have vanished. And he decided it was some place he needed to be besides the barn he left. I asked if she had seen anything, and the young lady said it was rumored some of the housekeeping staff had seen the lady in the big hat once or twice walk out of the mural, but they rarely stayed to see what the young lady did. More than one worker, she said, had quit after seeing some of the things that happened in that hotel. Now, she said she hadn't personally witnessed anything, but she'd heard a lot of stories that made her a little afraid to work the night shift in the bar. Well, since I was doing a book, I decided to see if I could verify the stories I'd heard. So I went to the hotel the next day and asked to speak to the manager. And I was referred to a young lady by the name of Michelle Cape, who's the director of sales. And she took time from her busy schedule to tell me the story she'd heard since coming to the Camino. Now, I frankly expected to get a blanket denial that there were any ghosts at the hotel, but she was frank with me. She said she'd heard folklore concerning two prominent spirits who appeared from time to time. The best-known story, she said, was about a young lady in a white gown. According to the young lady, she was to be married at the hotel, and something happened, and she now haunts the 10th floor. I asked if she had any idea of the name of the ghost, and she said it was rumored to be Catherine White, daughter of Zach White, the man that built the hotel. And the other spirit that seems to frequent the hotel is a well-dressed man who wears a black suit cut in the style of the 19th century and always wears a bowler hat. Now, he's been seen a number of times and is rumored to be Ben Dowell, a Kentuckian who became El Paso's first mayor. Now, she said Ben Dowell's home and saloon stood at 115 South El Paso Street, the spot where the Hotel Paso del Norte's original bar was built. I asked if for some examples of what happens when he appears, and she said she'd heard from housekeeping. He has the habit of appearing in closets and other odd places, scaring the daylights out of the housekeeper to come upon him unexpectedly. I asked about the stories I'd heard about doors suddenly appearing on the mezzanine level, and she said she'd heard from housekeeping that unexplained doorways and stairways have appeared at different locations throughout the hotel, where there may have once been a door or a stairway that doesn't exist today. Now, she hadn't heard the story about a housekeeper hearing a party going on, but I then asked about the mural around the dome bar where the lady allegedly walked out of the wall. She said she knew of a large photograph, but not a mural in the bar area. She said there was a faded artwork in what was the 10th floor ballroom, but she couldn't think of any murals that ever existed in the lobby area. I asked about seeing the artwork in the ballroom, and she replied it was no longer open to the public, as it was what was the original ballroom is now an engineering room. But talking about the engineering department reminded her of a story that a friend had told her. She said a man she knew well who'd been working in the engineering department, been in the dome bar one day when the man with the bowler hat came in and sat down beside him. Her friend said they had a very nice conversation of some length, and he seriously thought he was talking to a guest until the man with the bowler hat got up from his seat, walked into the corner near the bar, and vanished. And she assured me her friend had been a credible witness. I asked about other stories she'd heard since joining the staff. She said most of them dealt with occurrences on the 10th floor and the lobby, though, as she'd mentioned earlier in our conversation, the housekeepers talk about the man with the bowler hat appearing in various places around the hotel. So in retrospect, it's not a wild notion to think the Hotel Paso del Norte or the Camino Real could or would be haunted. Much life and death in El Paso over the almost 100 years the hotel that stood has been associated with this imposing structure. And due to its location, the hotel was the virtual center of life in early El Paso. There was a reenactment done in 1966 about an event that happened April 14, 1881. It's known as the Four Men Shot Dead in 5 Second Shootout. Took place in front of the Hotel Paso del Norte. In this particular confrontation, Dallas Studenmeyer, the newly appointed city marshal, was called upon to deal with the murder of a former Texas Ranger named Klimkall by Johnny Hale, manager of the Mannings Ranch, and a man on trial already for the murder of 2 Mexicans. Some of the testimony at the trial had been in Spanish, and Klimkall had been acted as a translator. Hale didn't like what was said and chose to accost Klimkall during the noon recess with a hidden gun had been smuggled to him by friends. In this shootout, Johnny Hale killed Klimkall. Studenmeyer pulled his weapon and shot at Hale, but instead of hitting Hale, killed a man named Lopez, an innocent bystander. Then he fired a second time and killed Hale. George Campbell, ex-city marshal and an enemy of Studenmeyer, chose to draw on the marshal. Studenmeyer killed Campbell. If such confusion legends are made and the death of an innocent man is forgotten. Well, at my request, Miss Cape allowed me to wander the hotel and talk to some of the staff. There was a very cute young lady named Rosemary Coigoy, worked at the front desk. She had a story about a guest staying on the 16th floor, directly below the presidential suite, which is located on the 17th floor. She was working the graveyard shift one night, and a guest called to complain about the noisy party, then the loud piano music coming from the floor above that was keeping him awake. So security was sent up to the presidential suite and discovered it was empty. There was no party. And nobody's playing the grand piano that's located in the presidential suite. But in the room below, the sounds of the party could still be heard. I talked to Robert Diaz, director of security for the hotel. He said there were 2 incidents that he'd been involved in during his time at the working there. A new manager, been transferred to El Paso, was living in the hotel looking for a house. One afternoon, she and her daughter went to the pool on the 10th floor. When she got there, she saw somebody she thought looked suspicious. A lady who appeared extremely angry stood outside the only door to the pool area, and there was a house phone there. She called security. 2 officers were dispatched to check on the lady. When they got there, there was no one in the pool area. Assuming she might have gotten out and left by way of the stairs, they checked the stairs all the way to the street level, never found anybody. But the fact of the matter was, she couldn't have gotten out of the pool area without being seen. Then the other incident happened during the construction on the new floors. There was night security furnished by the contractor to make sure the tools were safe. One night, he was called by wholesale security personnel and told that the security furnished by the contractor ran off the job and that one man kept running when he hit the street and disappeared. They weren't able to find that particular man, and he had actually been the one to spark the panic. Finally, the guard that had disappeared was found and questioned. He said that his job had been to provide security for the 17th floor. He said he'd been warned not to shut the doors along the halls. It had all been painted, and it was feared that they would stick shut. Workers' tools were stored in several rooms, so he was to just sit in the hallway and make sure nobody got into the rooms and stole any of the tools or shut the doors. He said he'd been sitting by a window reading a book and one of the doors being held open by a doorstop suddenly slammed shut. He got up, went and opened that door and put the doorstop back in and went back to his book. A few minutes, he glanced up to see the doorstop from one of the doors slide across the floor and that door slammed. Curious, thinking a friend might be playing a joke on him, here he opened that door, replaced the doorstop, and searched the entire floor. He didn't find anybody. Went back to his book, was peaceful for a few minutes, and then in unison, every single door along the hall slammed shut. At that point, he panicked and ran screaming down the stairs. The guard on the 16th floor heard him run by, and he was screaming, and so he started running down the stairs behind him. Then the guard on the 15th floor started to run behind him. All the guard from the 17th floor knew was he wasn't going back in the building. Well, this is the time of year the Medicare gremlins make their presence known. I must get a dozen calls a day wanting to give me Medicare benefits. And only the government can do that. None of these folks that call you can. Well, in another incident, during a construction in the 1990s, a crane that was bolted on the roof fell. And one of the cables snaked out and wrapped around a worker and pulled him off the roof. And they all crashed onto the on the overhang that's located on the third floor. The only way to get the dead man off the roof was either to take him to one of the guest rooms or just roll him over the edge. I'd have rolled him over the edge personally, but they took him in through one of the rooms. And from that time forth, nobody wants to stay in that particular room. And from time to time, those in the offices in that part of the third floor where the crane crashed, well, hear something slam onto the roof above them. They never find anything. There are a lot of people who have stayed in the room on the sixth floor where the young girl died report waking up in the middle of the night and seeing her floating over the bed looking down at them. You know, more than one occasion, folks in their pajamas carrying their suitcases showing up at the front desk to check out. They don't want to stay with a ghost. When I did a number of ghost tours there, on one occasion, security let us into that room on the sixth floor. Like stepping into an icebox. You never know what you're going to find when you wander the halls of that particular hotel. You know, another haunted building is across the way at the Cortez building. It started out being the Hotel Vendome. It's located in the northeast corner of North Mason, Mills Avenue. It's an 11-story building. It's shaped in, it's L-shaped, about the second floor with 12 bays facing Mason, 10s facing Mills. While this building was never ranked as one of Trost's more artistic designs, it did incorporate one original feature not found in other buildings of the period. Peering out of the rondelles above the Mesa Street entrance is a series of portrait heads of conquistadors. It's said that one of those conquistador heads was actually Trost. Now, the hotel was built at the cost of $1.5 million for Alzina Orndorff de Groff, a well-known hotel operator in Tucson and El Paso. It was originally called the Hotel Orndorff, a third hotel to bear that name, and the second Orndorff hotel to occupy that same spot. Said that between the cost of building the hotel and the rich furnishings spent, Alzina Orndorff de Groff spent over $6 million, which today would be almost 20. One week before the opening of the Grand Orndorff Hotel in 1926, Alzina Orndorff de Groff was caught in a freak rainstorm, came down with pneumonia, and died before the grand opening. She had looked forward to it so much. Even so, it was said by some, she still watches over her dream hotel, and changes are not welcome. A number of people who went to the grand opening reported seeing Alzina Orndorff de Groff, wandering around looking at the finished product. Her ghost couldn't stay away. In the lobby, workers have maintained they feel the presence of others even when they're alone, and most feel these presences come and go up and down the stairs. There have been reports of reflections of people being seen in the metalwork of the elevators who are not in the elevators. A psychic I know by the name of Connie Wang used to go through the building with the El Paso ghost tour. Very friendly with the security guard. One day she saw him walk past her without speaking and round the corner in one of the halls. She followed him to see if there was something wrong. But when she ran around the corner, just seconds later, the hallway was empty. She found out later he hadn't been at work that day. He was homesick. So what or who had she seen? El Paso Ghost Tour was the two ladies who were doing it before I started doing it in 1999. People have, shall we say, hijacked the name of my company, and they're doing their own thing now. Children have been seen and heard playing in the hallways when there are no children in the building. One of them is Joseph. A little boy loves to ride his tricycle in the lobby area. If he gets approached, he'll race around the corner and vanish, much the same way as the guard Connie Wang saw vanished. There was once a fast food restaurant located in one of the retail areas of the building. The night crew would complain of people coming to the counter, placing an order, and then vanishing when the worker turned to fill the order. I'm told that some employees refused to work the night shift. In the ballroom of this hotel, a young woman dressed in a ball gown from another era has been seen sitting and weeping. But if she is approached, she'll get up and walk into the shadows where there's no doorway, but she'll vanish. Maybe there was once a doorway there, but it's no longer. It's been theorized that at this location there's a portal to another dimension where once weddings and parties were held. Maybe some of these entities are caught in between worlds, so to speak, doomed forever to try and get back to their home, but always failing. And there are reports of a room off the cloakroom where there seems to be some type of portal or energy vortex. Several psychics have called this a doorway, but a doorway to where? Well, another location I've been that I found absolutely fascinating was the Queen Mary in Long Beach. You know, the keel for the HMS Queen Mary was laid in 1930 in Clyde, Scotland, but it wasn't completed till 36 due to a downturn in the economy. She didn't make her maiden voyage until May 27th of 1936. She served 3 years as a passenger liner carrying passengers across the Atlantic till war broke out in 1939. When the U.S. entered the war, the Queen Mary was converted into a troop ship. Painted gray to make her more difficult to detect by the enemy, she became known as the Gray Ghost. She took troops from the U.S. to England in preparation for D-Day. During that time, she set the record for the most people on an ocean voyage at one time with 16,683. That's a lot of folks. After the war, she continued to serve the military by transporting war brides and children from Europe to the U.S. She made 13 voyages in this capacity before she was refurbished and returned to service as a passenger liner. In the 1960s, ocean liners are falling out of fashion with the rise of air traffic between the continents. She made occasional luxury cruises before being sold to the city of Long Beach in 1967. Made her final transatlantic crossing before she was permanently docked. Her boilers were removed and she was rendered unable to move under her own power, converted into a hotel and museum. Now, there have been a lot of stories about hauntings reported on the Queen Mary. Stateroom B340 is no longer rented out because of the volume of paranormal activity. Some people claim it's haunted by the ghost of a murdered purser. But we found that information on other ghost websites, and not on any of the tours conducted by the Queen Mary staff. The faucets are supposed to turn themselves on by on and off, and sheets from the bed are said to have flown across the room. That room is has very little furniture in it now. One of the most famous ghosts of the Queen Mary is believed to be that of John Peter, a fireman in the engine room that was crushed by the infamous Door 13 in part of the ship known as Shaft Alley. Apparently, during an emergency, the watertight doors would be closed to seal off sections of the ship to avoid sinking. The legend goes that crew members would hop back and forth through the doors as many times as they could before the door would close. Apparently, John Peter tried once too many and was crushed by the closing door. A man seen wearing the blue overall, sometimes described as having a beard, has been seen walking down Shaft Alley and disappearing at Door 13. On the Ghost and Legends tour, they refer to this man as Half Hatch Harry. But that's not the real name. John Peter is listed on the sign in the infirmary of crew members that died. First Class Swimming Pool is another famous haunted location on the Queen Mary. Some reports claim it's haunted by the ghosts of people who drowned in the pool, but the Queen Mary's own sign detailing the causes of death for passengers on the liner doesn't list a single death due to drowning in the pool. The ghosts seen in the First Class Swimming Pool area seem to be exclusively female. Now, reports of at least one adult woman and a little girl that haunt this location. The little girl said to have drowned in the Second Class Swimming Pool, which has since been removed. Her name's reported to be Jackie, and she's been seen in a number of places around the ship. I was given someone to be a companion. And we wandered through the ship, taking photographs and making recordings. The changing room at the back of the swimming pool is said to hold a vortex of negative energy, or maybe a gateway between dimensions. One story suggests this is due to a woman having been raped in the changing rooms at one point. There's a live ghost webcam that continuously films the swimming pool. The pool's also part of the special effects tour, Ghost and Legends of the Queen Mary, that includes smoke and light effects. And while all the boilers have been removed from the ship when it was docked at Long Beach, the massive rooms that once housed them are still there. The four of the boiler rooms are now used as part of the Ghost and Legends special effects show. The massive middle boiler rooms have been converted into conference space, and the aft boiler rooms are included on the regular tour and the late-night paranormal tours. The boiler rooms were dangerous places. Not surprising, these locations may have had their own ghost stories. Jackie is sometimes seen in the boiler rooms, as well as a male ghost that's thought to have been a crew member that worked on the boilers. These rooms are massive and have a creepy feeling to them. During World War II, when the Queen Mary was known as the Grey Ghost, she accidentally rammed one of her escort ships, caused it to sink. At the point on the bow of the Queen Mary where she collided with the escort, screams can sometimes still be heard, especially late at night. Public is normally only allowed to visit as part of the ship on the Ghost and Legends tour. And there are a number of other parts of the Queen Mary that are said to be haunted. Seems the whole ship is a beacon for paranormal activity. The infirmary and the lounge are other parts of the ship with their own tales of ghosts. In my interviews with various members of the crew, we got reports of strange feelings fairly often. The only crew member reported seeing a possible apparition told us an interesting story. It was a waitress at the Chelsea restaurant stated she'd been working the host podium and saw three ghosts walk toward her through the long hallway that leads to the deck to the restaurant. Looked down at her reservation book for a party of three, and when she looked back up, there were only two people. She asked the guests whether or not they preferred to wait for their third member before being seated, and they assured her there were only the two of them. She also reported the faucets in the nearby women's bathroom go on and off by themselves. It's certainly an interesting place at night to wonder. And they gave me the permission to wonder when and where I wanted. And I heard a lot of strange things that were hard to explain. Well, we've come to the end of tonight's show. We're going to talk tomorrow about some haunted locations in New Mexico. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for The Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.